It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Located in LaGrange, Illinois, Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimera's Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Hey, this is Caffeinated Comics. Thank you once again, Jeff Sussman. I'm going to thank you till the end of time for that.
It's a wonderful intro.
It's beautiful. A wonderful intro. And I am joined today, I am your host, John Clark. I am joined by both owners of Chimera's Comics today, my regular co-host,
Stephen Brown.
And with us today,
Carmelo Chimera.
Rarely in the same room.
Very rarely. Some people have posited that Stephen Brown is actually Carmelo Chimera.
I might be the same person.
Well,
doing a voice.
We think it might
That would be awesome if you were doing that voice right now.
Both at the same time?
How would the viewing audience know?
What would they say?
My God.
This is like watching Mark Hamill at work.
It is like watching Mark Hamill. Oh, I would love to see, speaking of Mark Hamill, I would love to see, and I don't know if they do this, and I'd have to check the DVDs, but, you know, he's just in a booth like this, where and he just says things in a microphone, but is he actually acting like the Joker?
Yeah, they say he's the only one that actually stands up.
Oh,
everyone
really?
Is on a stool, but he says he stands up to use his whole diaphragm to get into it. There was, it just makes me so mad it wasn't on the DVD, on The Mask of the Phantasm, I remember when it came out, HBO had like a 50 minutes behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I taped it, and it was on my VHS copy of Batman the Animated Series, like before the DVDs came out, and I was just taping every episode. And they showed everybody recording.
But this didn't make it on the DVD for Phantasm?
No, that's nothing's dumb. On the DVD for Phantasm.
Oh, God.
That, honestly, that might be my favorite Batman movie.
It is really good. I was just watching it
to
again.
This day, it brings a tear to my eye.
It's a good movie.
That's what I don't understand is I don't think we're alone in that. I think everyone pretty much likes it, so I'm kind of surprised there isn't a DVD with that level of attention to the special
They just kind of dropped it out. I mean, it's still in the cardboard box that
yeah,
Warner Brothers
used to use. Yeah, it seems like something they always keep in like the Rolodex. They're always like, it's always printed.
I'm hoping there'll be a Blu-ray someday. I would love to see a Blu-ray with...
Is that show Blu-ray yet?
I don't think so.
No,
only
Justice League.
Is there really like a difference? I don't know. And
yeah.
I'm ignorant about
Blu-ray. It is
from
huge.
Regular
with the cartoons.
Regular cartoon to Blu-ray cartoon, it's a different.
Yeah,
noticeable.
You know what it is? Especially my TV is gargantuan.
Your TV is enormous.
Yeah, so my DVD.
It's bigger than
We're
my
apartment.
We're actually
sitting on his TV right now comfortably.
Yeah, in one corner.
All of us, yes. We're the picture in picture. Right
so
now.
The DVDs, the line work will start to break up, and you'll when it's a diagonal line, it'll pixelate and it'll break up and become a staircase. So with the Blu-rays, when I got the Justice League, it's just really clean.
That's awesome.
I do have trouble picking up the difference when it's up converted versus the Blu-ray, because I've seen up converted cartoons and they do look really great. So, but maybe again, it's because I can't afford a television the size of Rhode Island. So.
And it all depends if they did restoration, because I mean, BBC America will show Star Trek: The Next Generation on its HD channel. But when you get the Blu-rays where they've done the restoration work, it's night and day.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
So we started out not talking about the topic.
No, but Justice League, the cartoon, is a great segue to today's topic.
Right. Well, we had Dave Gonzalez on talking about Batman.
It's a loose segue,
so,
I'll give you that.
So whenever you have Batman...
I'm still new at this.
Whenever you have Batman, the other half of the equation is Superman. And Carm is a huge Superman fan.
That's
so
right,
we've asked
John.
Him to come in because... I want to know why Superman still exists.
Yeah, oh. John's of the opinion that we the world doesn't need Superman, which was the plot for
World Without a Superman,
Superman Returns, World Without a Superman, and several other things. I'll have you know, there is no such book or movie or anything that says what would the world do without Batman? What would the world do without Spider-Man?
The most famous Superman story is when he dies.
Yes.
Is that how this is going to be? Is that what this is?
This is exactly... We were doing a trap.
I was not told about this. I was told we were going to do a Superman tribute, and now this is Superman
No
roast.
One used the word tribute.
You used the word repeatedly.
No. You hear you what you want to hear.
You showed me a drawing
no.
of an Oscar with an S on the man's chest.
I said...
He had a little red cape.
He had a little red cape.
I texted you and said, podcast about Superman, and you said yes. That goes as far as we got.
That's John's
what
level
have
of
I
communication.
Done?
I don't have anything against Superman. I have no problem with Superman, but... Whenever I look at Superman, he's the prototype superhero. He's the first one.
Yep.
He has every power. He's a guy in tights and a cape and a secret identity, and he stops crime. And I felt like they took – DC even itself took that model and spliced it.
Yeah.
And then made more interesting characters out of that. We took the super speed out. We made the Flash, who's awesome. We took the power and flight out. We made Green Lantern.
You pretty much took the costume. We took the Patriot. All the superpowers.
Yeah.
We took.
And you made Batman.
You take the patriotism, and you get Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
You get the cape and the devotion to crime fighting. You get Batman. You basically everyone in the Justice League Martians, is a facet of Superman.
Yeah, pretty much every superhero I would say is a sliver of Superman.
But so why is Superman?
Well, yeah, that's why I think. It does not answer the question why we need him today, and we can talk about that, but why we need why we need Superman generally is, I think, right there. You can't have the counterculture until you have the culture. You can't have the deviant until you have the norm. And when you've
I think that's a great point.
I appreciate that. You know, when you've got, if a superhero is a superhero, he has a cape and boots. And then when you want to do something different, what do? Well, we'll take away the cape.
A trench coat and calls him Source Rorschach and throws people in down elevator shafts.
Exactly right.
Rorschach is only a half step away from being Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Not Dr. Manhattan.
That's what I was saying. Yeah,
I think the connection's clear. Yeah, but so that's kind of what I'm getting at is I don't think you have any of those other characters. Forget just DC. Talk about like Marvel too. You know, the whole idea behind Spider-Man, for instance, was our audience is teenagers, not good-looking 30-year-old guys with lantern jaws.
Well, wait a minute. There's me.
Well, John, yes, I'll admit, you have John. A chin that would make Bruce Campbell jealous. I'll give you that.
I have to cover it with hair.
I was going to say, it's mostly just to hair.
It's the only way I can be in the same room.
Just to keep myself
you.
From getting stopped every 4 feet.
Yeah.
I definitely see
I'm
it.
I'm like a 5'6" John Hamm.
Perpetually in disguise.
Oh, you know what? That's what everyone says about you, John.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's on your Facebook profile.
That's all right. Wait, there's a good point. So Phil Noto, who is an awesome artist, currently working on Ghost for Dark Horse. See what I did there, repping some comics.
Very brilliant.
He has a blog, like a lot of artists do, and he was, before they cast this, whoever this guy is in this Man of Steel movie,
Henry Cavill.
This guy from the Tudors. He was saying John Hamm would be awesome as
Superman. A lot of people said that.
Well, I listened to John Hamm on Never Not Funny, Jimmy Pardo's podcast, which I love. John Hamm was on there when they were discussing who it was going to be.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Pardo asked him, he's like, come on, is it you? And John Hamm said, I can't say anything, but I will say that I auditioned for Superman Returns, and they said I was too old then.
Oh, wow.
So I think they want somebody in his late 20s to play Superman.
Because, like, John Hamm looks like an Alex Ross Superman.
Very classic.
John Hamm's actually very lucky he wasn't cast as a superhero because he would never be able to get out of typecasting otherwise.
Yeah. And now he's right. I mean, imagine if he had gotten the part in Superman Returns, then he would have Brandon Routh's career, which is
one small part in Scott Pilgrim and Dylan Dog,
which is sad because I really enjoyed Brandon Routh as Superman, and I'm ready to defend him to the death, and I really enjoyed that whole film.
Do we get into that argument now, or do we stay with the first?
Superman Returns.
We should cover a lot of things. Yeah,
because they had directly addressed why the world doesn't need Superman in Superman Returns, or at least they try to.
Right.
So it's topical.
Well, of course, my argument to that is, in Superman Returns, they say why the world doesn't need Superman, but it's not – Superman Returns does not exist in the DC universe. It exists in our universe with Superman.
Okay.
That's my whole problem. I completely agree with you for Superman's place in history.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Superman has become like Mickey Mouse, where he's the corporate symbol of this company that's been forged in cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
He meant a lot at one point. But is he necessarily relevant now? A lot of the reason of the new 52 was to boost Superman sales, and that didn't happen.
I didn't bring enough coffee for this, John.
Yeah, maybe not.
I'm going to try.
Yeah, you brought the coffee.
Well,
this
you know what?
I brought tea. I brought a Diet Sprite. What was I thinking?
And this is something I think going back to like the origins of Superman and what it was like is, and I didn't know this until I watched that Secret Origin DVD that DC put out.
Oh yeah, that was really good.
It's awesome, and Mark Waid's in it pretty extensively. Pretty heavily. He's interviewed. This must be before DC got
before
pissed
he
in.
Went back to Marvel.
Yeah, before he's working at Marvel, and he was saying, and I did not know this, but that Superman was bigger than Beatlemania. It was so big, like in the 30s and 40s, how many copies they were selling, like all this stuff. And we have no concept for that, like what
but
it was like.
He has had some really, not just peaks, but really big plateaus because, in the Golden Age, nothing could touch him. Batman wasn't nearly as popular.
Yeah.
The closest Batman came in the 40s is guest starring on Superman's radio show.
Yeah.
Batman didn't have his own radio show.
We're talking radio shows, cartoons. The
Fleischer cartoons.
The Fleischer cartoons.
Still some of the best cartoons ever.
They're
made.
Beautiful. successful. And when you look at the timeline, Superman has been around maybe 4 or 5 years when those were made. Mm. So he was that important that early.
Yeah, because those Coast cartoons were astronomically expensive compared to other cartoons at the time.
They actually mention in the DVD that the studio didn't want to do it. The Fleischers didn't want to do it. And so they charged whatever company was handling DC at the time, maybe it was DC or National or whatever it was called, they charged them an astronomical amount of money. They were like, all right, we'll just set the bar up here, and figuring they won't do it because it's so expensive. And they were like, no, let's do it. And they were like, fuck, now we got to put
it all right, now we got to animate all this crap.
Now we got to do Superman and get paid a fortune to do it at the time.
Yeah, and I think we all agree then that his place in history is secure. But then the question is, has he grown bigger than the character? Has the symbol of Superman...
You know, there's that great line Batman has in, fuck, I can't remember where, if Mark Waid might have wrote it, or maybe it was in that Infinite Crisis nonsense DC did a couple years ago, the like their second big crisis or whatever, and Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are talking, and, you know, Superman says something like, I'm here to inspire people, and then Batman says something like, the last time you inspired people was when you died. And that was like 10 minutes, like, damn!
Hey, Batman, you know who the most inspirational person in your lives were? Your parents, when they died.
Dead.
I think that's Geoff Johns. I think that's like issue one of Infinite Crisis.
Yeah, they were like in the ruined watchtower or something.
That's a big moment.
Yeah.
But the thing that nails it for me, and like I said, I'm not saying Superman is stupid. I'm not saying, I've had a crush on Lois Lane since I was 8.
Right. Well,
and I do not find Margot Kidder attractive, and I have a crush on Lois Lane.
Yeah, no, I didn't think much of her.
But,
no offense, Margot.
But the thought that occurred to me today as we were preparing for this podcast was, if you have
our many hours of preparation.
You have the big 7 of the Justice League. If you take Superman out, they become, little more interesting because they become more of underdogs, because then you have to rely on Green Lantern for this.
And
you have to rely on Batman for something else.
When you got like the Justice League standing around and they've run into this problem in the comic and the cartoon, you take away everybody else, what can't Superman do? Like, all right, if Batman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and Flash and Green Lantern go off to like Mars with the Martian Manhunter for like a picnic, nothing's going to happen that Superman can't be like, I got this.
Right, Seinfeld had a bit, and like he even does it on one of the episodes of Seinfeld where he's like, why does Superman even need the Justice League? He's like, you're telling me Superman can't swim?
Right. Well, no, you know, I think they did this story that was excellent, was Justice League The Nail, which Alan Davis, I think.
That's a great story.
He did the art, yeah.
Great story, and I think they cut to the point of that is that it's not even that, and yeah, Superman comes in at the end, but it's not even that they didn't have the firepower to handle these crises. That comic accentuated exactly what is missing from the Justice League and the DC Universe, and it's that without him, you really don't have that symbol of hope, that symbol of integrity, and that is what Superman is. That is why he's important. That's why I kind of scoff when people try to depower him to make him interesting, because his power levels should have nothing to do with how interesting he is. The thing that's interesting about him is that his greatest strength is not physical, but moral. But that gives us that goal to aspire to.
Well, that's why I always felt that when they brought out the Century, they were like, finally, Marvel has a Superman. And my initial reaction was like, Marvel already has a Superman. It's Captain America.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, his name's Captain America, and he has...
But the thing that keeps Captain America vital is that he doesn't have powers, and that he stands toe-to-toe with guys like Thor.
Yeah, but I think that only makes it, you know, all that means to me is... Superman's really hard to write because he's so powerful. So every month you got to come up with like a different threat that's got to be, okay, this one's psychological, this one's emotional, this one's physical. It's like, well, how many walls can this guy run into before it's like, come on.
I agree with that, you know, completely, but I think it's interesting to note that one of the best Superman stories I've ever read, and certainly in the last couple of years, was All-Star Superman, where not only was he at full power, he was overpowered.
They gave him like 16 extra powers.
Yeah,
awesome.
And still interesting. Why? Because when you keep coming up with bigger threats, it will start being boring. Because once you do Doomsday and you kill him, you can't do anyone bigger and stronger for him to fight. More interesting would be stories that put him in dilemmas. You know, I've been watching a lot of Lois and Clark recently, and the thing about that show is no threat
Terry
comes
Hatcher.
Up. Well, she's fantastic.
That was the reason I was watching.
That's the thing that was interesting.
I'm pretty
about
sure
that.
Terry Hatcher put me through puberty.
Everything Terry Hatcher did before Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, but I think they try to make her look haggard on that show. I think they're trying to make her look like a worn out single mom. Maybe. But she's, because I've seen her outside of it and she's gorgeous.
She always has a red nose on Desperate Housewives.
That's intentional. They, you know, they have makeup people to do that. You know, I don't think she's actually sick. I don't think she's actually had a cold for 6 years.
Miss Hatcher needs more red on her nose. Chop, chop.
But my point about Lois and Clark was that they never run into a problem Superman can't fight, and he's not depowered on that show. He takes nukes to the face. He fights meteors. The thing about that show is they play up the reporter aspect, so it's really more of Lois and Clark try to find the threat or find out what's going on, then Superman stops it. So the drama comes, can he catch it in time? And of course he always does. But so they didn't make the point of the show these big threats. They made it, okay, he's got to figure out what's going on or find out who the bad guy is. And that's one approach to it. You know, another approach might be putting him in dilemmas. Like, he can't be in two places at once. He's super fast, but maybe sometimes he does have to choose between Hackensack, New Jersey and the San Andreas fault line. And that's much more interesting.
My mother lives in Hackensack.
Okay, no one can hear me do this, but I'm looking at my watch and shaking my head just like Gene Hackman did. Just trust me, it was a perfect impression. So I think that's the kind of stuff you can do with Superman that people fall away from because they're used to, like, well, it's a comic book, so I need a villain for him to fight. And he should have some villains to fight, but at the same time, much more interesting is watching him struggle with those dilemmas.
Right. So that probably brings me to my biggest question about Superman is why does he struggle for sales then? Why do we have one really great Superman movie that we can all point to and then five movies, one coming, which we don't know anything about, that all have significant flaws. Why is it that he didn't break out in the New 52 with all new talent that really wanted to be there? What is it about Superman doesn't make him a Spider-Man, that doesn't make him, or rather put him on that level, that doesn't make him a Captain America?
Yeah, I was gonna say there's much the runs, if you could point to, like, really good runs on, like, Fantastic Four, for instance. Right. Stanley and Kirby is the top, you know. Then Mark Waid's got an awesome run. Like, there's several different runs you can point to. These are good runs on the Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. Maybe three for Superman, maybe four in...
Well, it's because it is hard to write. Those ethical dilemmas are a lot harder to write. And I'm not saying other characters are easy or that writers who don't write Superman are bad. But, you know, I think that maybe it's a little bit more accessible and understandable. You know, sales-wise, I want to, if I can point us away from the comics for just a second, toward the television show Smallville, which, like it or hate it, for all its good and for all its flaws, that show was on for 10 years, okay? Yeah. So it was successful, no matter what you want to call it.
Yeah.
Steven and I have spoken about this before, and I think the reason that show was successful, and they were able to write 22 episodes for 10 seasons, 200-some-odd episodes of that show, they wrote, because they put Clark at the center of it. He grew up as a human being who has these powers, not as God. And then I think that's so much more interesting when you take the world and hoist it on a man's shoulders. Not his Superman is just an image. And then he needs to keep up that image. And I think that kind of pressure, that's interesting. And that's what's fascinating about, that is one of the things that did work about Smallville. I can't point to enough comics that do it. I can point to a few. But it seems like the writers who have approached him haven't taken that angle. The ones who have written some of my favorite comic stories ever.
Yeah, it feels like you're either into Superman or you're not. It's because when we talked to Mark Waid, when we saw him at the signing, and I said, what's your favorite character to write? And he just said, Superman, and that's it.
Yeah,
and I said, why is that? He goes, I saw the Richard Donner movie. I love Superman.
Well, what he said was, I realized when I saw that movie that Superman is someone who cares about everyone. And I got chills when Mark Waid said that, and had good fortune to be there to hear him say it, because it is so true. He is infinitely compassionate. That compassion is his most admirable quality. And, you know, it's the one I lack the most, that I wish, I don't want his ability to fly. I wish I had that compassion. That's why we need Superman.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's always going to be a place for him. It's just, like I said, I think the challenge lies on the writers to then give us that. And,
right.
You know, yeah, because I've always said that my favorite Superman is Superman in the Justice League, just because you can use him to contrast every other character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But which is why I liked Superman Batman, you know, the revamped World's Finest.
Yeah, so good.
The Jeff Loeb run especially, he just really, he played up the contrast by having like two separate internal
that
monologues
first
running.
Six issues or whatever with was Ed McGuinness. Awesome. Yeah, yeah, where they were going back and forth.
It was
and, like,
so good. So
they're,
good.
You know, it's how, and that, and all that book to me was, this is the purest definition of like Superman and Batman's like relationship was this right. book. You know, but like you said,
and the great runs of Justice League, like Grant Morrison,
JLA, Mark Waid's afterwards, like they did enough of. Superman to me is always much more interesting. I'll read a Justice League comic before I read a Superman monthly, and that was maybe my only complaint. And it's I wouldn't even change it if I could. Is what All-Star Superman's complete didn't have. There was no Justice League. There's no. He didn't interact with any other superheroes. Right.
He barely mentions them, and then
he mentions like Batman and
yeah. Even like, Hush has a Superman Batman team up issue.
Yeah, and that issue is awesome. And it's
that's
like,
one of the best moments of that story.
Yeah, yeah. was the mind control Superman out of control.
Yep.
You know. So like I said, I think to me Superman's always much more interesting when surrounded by other characters. But like, if Superman's not in the Justice League, it's like this is like me reading Avengers without Captain America. It's like, where's Superman?
Right.
You know, I'll read a story without him, and they can make it interesting without him. But it's like he's got to be on the team. Like he's got to be there somewhere.
Well, and that goes back to, I think the bigger issue that goes back to the Big Seven should always be the Justice League.
Yes.
As well, like once you get to the point of having Fire and Ice and Metamorpho on the team, it stops being interesting. This was interesting too because I was just talking to Joe Pakovitz, who was on our first show. About he was reading Justice League International. He just started the Geffen DeMatteis, which he loves.
Yeah,
and we were saying how he said one of the things that was great about it was a lot of B-listers. It had Batman in the center.
Yeah,
you know, it had Dr. Fate for a while.
It had Guy Gardner instead of Hal Jordan.
I love that run.
Yep. Yeah, it's one of my awesome favorite book. Comics ever. I'm really disappointed that they downgraded the hardcovers to trade paperbacks, or I would have kept getting those.
Yeah.
But one of the things we were saying about when you're writing a team book, and this might be a podcast in and of itself, team books versus solo books. One of the problems is when you have a team book where you're using characters from other books, you can't really do anything with them.
Yeah.
You know, any major thing that happens, Superman is never going to quit being Superman in a Justice League story.
Right.
If they do that story, that's an Action Comics.
Yeah.
You know, Batman's never going to die in a Justice League story. Even when Grant Morrison killed him in Final Crisis, he really kills him in Batman.
Yeah.
And then kind of pulls that story into the crossover.
Right. Like the whole Justice League will die in a Justice League book, but they're back the next issue.
Yeah. You know, City Batman, story, yeah.
Batman's still alive in his own book doing his own thing. And that's the problem when they're publishing monthly comics with teams versus single issues, you know, it's like Wolverine's on like three or four different teams.
Right.
Right.
You know, but going back to like the Justice League.
And Wolverine's even trickier because what's Wolverine's main book? He was a guy that was only in X-Men for a good decade before he got his own book.
And so if you secondary character that too. I mean, he was just another guy in the team. He was like Colossus or Nightcrawler or anybody else. Colossus doesn't have his own book. Colossus isn't on the Fantastic Four joining the Avengers. Yeah. He's a mutant, and Wolverine is like the only one to kind of upgrade himself through the rosters, much more than like Beast, who joins the Avengers. Now he's got his own. Wolverine's got his own solo book. He's on, you know, the Avengers. He's on three or four different Avengers teams at the time.
Yeah, but his solo book always felt like a secondary book.
Yeah.
So then you get to that point where you want to do something major with him,
and I think it's the major things where Wolverine are still going to happen.
Where do you do it? And
I think it still happens Wolverine particularly in the X-Men books.
I would agree completely. Completely.
Well, traditionally, when it happens, is in the crossovers. So probably the most significant moment, at least in my reading history of Wolverine, was when he had his adamantium ripped out.
Right.
That happens in X-Men 25. It's immediately continued in Wolverine 75.
Yeah.
So both his solo book and the X-Men book are equally important.
Right.
Didn't Death of Superman cross over into Justice League then?
Yeah.
I think they had some tie-ins.
And it was Justice League International at the time too.
It was early in the story. Basically, Doomsday beats up everybody in the Justice League really quickly to show how big a threat he is.
Yeah.
And then it comes in. But then, of course, Death of Superman was such a huge, huge moment that it affected basically every book.
Yeah, I mean, they had, Funeral for a Friend or something, I think it was called, went through all the books. Yeah. But, I mean, I think getting back to, like, the Justice League, I think, like, the Justice League, you said, has to be, like, the Big Seven. And I'll accept other rosters, but I'm always like, these guys are just filling in until the Big Seven get. With the Avengers, it's a lot different because I'm like, oh no, now it's time for Hawkeye and Mockingbird and War Machine and all these other guys to be the Avengers. It's a much more fluid lineup where the Justice League always immediately think of the Big Seven.
Let me throw
a
wrench at you then. Who's the seventh? Who are you referring to? I know who I think of as the
Aquaman.
Seventh. You think of Aquaman as the seventh?
Yeah.
I think it's Aquaman.
In one of the longer runs, it was Plastic Man for a long time.
Well, and Bruce Timm used Hawkgirl.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is I wonder about that seventh slot. I would give it to Aquaman.
I only give it to Aquaman, and this is because I'm very, like, the classics the way it was, right. Which is insane because I'm, you know, in my 20s.
26, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, Aquaman formed the Justice League with, like, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, and Martian Man. It was them.
That's
and
another great... Superman, this Batman is this probably later. The eighth time we've mentioned Mark Waid. That's another great story.
It's going to be all of Mark Waid. He's so great.
Yeah, and actually, yeah, I have a big man crush on Mark Waid. Well, he switched out in that book. He switched out Wonder Woman for Black Canary.
Well, that was a DC initiative because post-Crisis...
Yeah.
Wonder Woman had never left Paradise Island until very recently. So right. So across the board, Wonder Woman became Black Canary whenever they redid Silver Age stories.
And that was something I was fine with because it's like, well, that's still an interesting dynamic, you know, Black Canary. But
yeah, she's an interesting character.
Yeah, she is.
Right. And then they even do the issue. Mark Waid covers it like trying to get Superman to join the Justice League.
And he says no.
He turns it down.
Which Gavin DeMatteis also do. Like,
did he do that?
A couple after Invasion, which was not a great crossover, but some very early McFarlane work.
I want to say Geoff Johns touches on it too. He did something where he was writing Justice League, or somebody was writing Justice League, and it was the original five. It was like a flashback, and then Superman and Batman were meeting, and they're like, you know, did you hear Green Lantern and Flash? They're getting all these guys together, and then Clark's like, he's like, are you going to join? And Batman smirks at him and says, only if you do. And it's like they were even buddies like before the Justice League teaming up. Like World's Finest kind of stuff, and they were like, oh wow, these other guys are getting together, and I think there's a little like, we could still take them.
And Geoff Johns is another guy that messes with the Seven because he takes out Martian Manhunter and puts in Cyborg,
which is and that's very recent, because up until 3 or 4 years ago, Martian Manhunter was the only character on every lineup of the Justice League.
Right, and that's because Martian Manhunter was the only character that couldn't support his own book.
They don't know what else to do with
it. We could talk about that sometime. I think it would be interesting, you know, as a different podcast.
Yeah, Martian Manhunter is a great character, and that's one of my disappointments of the New 52, was that they shunted him over to Stormwatch, which was an Image book. And I felt like they kind of pushed him off to the side of the DC
They've got
universe.
Some kind of plan for him, too, because they did a flashback in the New Justice League book where... You know, Aquaman or Flash, I don't know, Green Lantern, or somebody says something to Batman like, you know what happened last time we let an alien on the Justice League, or somebody we didn't know. And then it cuts to a panel of Martian Manhunter fighting all of them. And it's like before Cyborg joined.
Whoa.
So like they had him. Yeah. So they had Martian Manhunter on the team. Some kind of thing came up. He fights all of them. Just probably kicks the tar out of all of them.
Yeah.
And then they're like, wow, okay, he's gone. Goes, sends him over to like Stormwatch. And then Cyborg joins. And that's something that's interesting is like Martian Manhunter, this guy, like, nobody really knows Martian Manhunter. Everyone knows Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, these people. Martian Manhunter is like one of these like tricky guys where it's like not every kid knows who Martian Manhunter is, and TV show helped out with that.
Until Justice League,
Until Justice League.
Because he was never on Super
Friends. Yeah, he wasn't on Super. And I think that's actually a good point, is Super Friends was, that's like a gateway to like all these other characters.
Yeah, especially for my generation, which is not your generation.
Well, it was all replayed. I've seen just Super Friends since I was like six.
Right.
I always remember on Boomerang, it was
and
on
the
all
same
these cartoon
thing
shows.
The same thing with Batman was the first time I read Dark Knight Returns, I had no idea who Two-Face was. Mm-hmm. You know, they're talking about, oh, he's so dangerous, and he used to, and there's no pictures of him. They're just like, Harvey Dent. And I'm like, I don't know who this is, because he had never appeared on the Adam West show.
Yeah. And yeah.
So
that was another thing.
I had
like
no clue.
Thing.
So when Joker and Superman come in, it was major events.
Yeah.
But Two-Face, I had no idea because I didn't have that gateway.
When I was a kid, I thought Two-Face was a new villain. And then when I did find out that he's been around since like the 50s or something, I was like, what? Like,
yeah, when I found out he was older than King Tut, my world was blown.
Yeah,
he's a golden age guy.
Well, I was like, why wasn't he in the Adam West show? And it's like, you know, I guess they... Well,
and he would have been so perfect for the Adam West show because you could have...
I'll think of all the henchmen.
Just think of Tommy Lee Jones.
It's pretty much Tommy Lee Jones with his like dual headquarters where it's like half...
leopard skin.
Yeah, just like
The dual headquarters, the two henchmen.
Yeah, he's got two henchmen. That's what it would have been. It would have been like...
Yeah, you could have gotten like... You could have gotten like Sid Caesar to paint half his face pink, and then be like, "I'm good, now I'm bad, now I'm good, now I'm bad."
It really is just
that's
the
two
disfiguring
episodes right
burns.
There.
Maybe that was it. As a person with disfiguring burns, I can comment that,
which is why we are not posting pictures of you.
Exactly. I'm like, they actually
have one arm and three toes.
They keep me in
say.
A cage when I'm not on this podcast. So this is a real treat for me to be let out and get
the next one. We are going to keep you in the cage and just lower the mic in.
That's probably safer for everyone
because I am nervous.
I am. You know what? They're not contagious burns, but you never know when I might start another fire.
Contagious burns. That sounds horrible.
That sounds like a great superpower. But
I was going to say that should be like a new super. That's Superman's next threat to bring it back to Superman.
Unless fire itself is contagious burns. Because if you're on fire and I stand next to you long enough,
you will also
now I'm on fire.
Oh, now we're getting
there. We go.
All right, let's go back to Superman for a minute. There, who has heat vision that can create fires? Yay!
And you can't set him on fire.
See what I just did there?
Yeah, you can't set him on fire.
You can burn up his cape.
You can burn up his cape,
but
and
not
that's
his
about
costume.
It. Yeah.
Well, and I've heard a couple different things about that. Like, sometimes it's like, well, his cape's made out of the same material and it's affected by the sun, bullshit
science. I like
science.
That the best.
The other one I hear is that Superman has a force field.
That was a John Byrne thing.
That's a John Byrne thing.
John Byrne was the only time I read Superman as a monthly.
Right.
And I
that was so good, too. That Man of Steel run was awesome. Good.
I've never read all that. Is that
and then he spun that
reading?
Off into like Superman.
Yeah,
yeah, he was doing both books at the time. He's doing action and Superman.
And he took on a lot of questions about like logistics of Superman that I don't think anyone took seriously before. Like, why is Clark super jacked? And he was like, oh crap, I better buy like a set of weights and keep them in my apartment in case Lois comes over.
And weird little exactly things like happens. How does Superman shave, which I think they did in Lois and Clark, where he had a mirror and he used his heat vision. To burn
and they did that in the Bruce Timm cartoon.
Cool.
Yeah, but I guess the explanation is he absorbs so much solar energy that he kind of lets a little bit out. And that explains a good portion of his invulnerability as well, is this like millimeter thin layer of force field that can protect skin
tight
stuff.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
No. Well, like the best explanation, you know, because that's the first thing everyone rips on Superman is he puts on glasses and no one knows it's him. It's like, if I wore glasses, you'd know it was me. Well, the idea, and the, you know, going back to Mark Waid, because, you know, can't rep the guy enough, I guess, is he wrote in JLA.
I wonder if he's thinking about us.
They did.
I doubt it.
The JLA have to like tell each other who their secret identities. Like Batman and Superman have to tell everyone because like they don't have trust anymore. And Superman tells like Green Lantern and Flash, he's like, well, I'm Clark Kent and I write for the Daily Bugle. And then Flash is like, oh my god,
the Daily Bugle, that's in the Marvel.
Someone was gonna go after that.
Crossover Daily Planet for all you creepy
that's
nerds
astonishing.
Out there.
You mean there's other universes out there? Now we're on
there's
a
only
topic.
One. And he Flash is like, oh, I read your articles. And then Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern, says like, I didn't know you had a day job. It's like,
right.
The idea of secret identities is because Superman is a comic book character. Like,
well, Superman.
You know, we just assume comic book characters have secret identities.
Right.
But to them,
in the comic book world,
right, why,
DC
why
Comics,
would Superman be a human being?
He's Superman all the time.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that's right. And I think
that's what people think.
Well, I always think of Superman as creating secret identities. And then, of course, I have to remove that because you think of Zorro, you think of Lone Ranger.
Oh, that's
true. A lot of masked men who protected. But the thing about Superman literally spent decades. Where every story was protecting his secret identity.
Yeah, I mean, the 50s was like all this, like,
it was like
Superman's a jerk.
Did he kill somebody once? I feel like I saw a cover with a guy in a cage and Superman's like, I'm going to lock you up in the North Pole forever because you know my secret. And I'm pretty sure that guy died.
Yeah, he spent most of his time lying to his friends.
Right, yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. Superman comics are shitty.
I am going to take care of Steven after the show because we still need him to finish off this podcast. But I think they talk about...
Well, let me ask you this, Carm. Are you reading all the Superman comics?
No, I'm not. Absolutely not. Because... And I'm not saying...
Reuben.
I'm
because
not even.
They suck.
Well, maybe they do, maybe they don't. I
they
can't say
George
I don't
Perez
want to.
Away in
I certainly
issues.
Don't want to insult the creators working on them and helping us at our comic book store sell things. But that said, I just don't. If I had heard that any of them are like really doing the character justice in the way that I imagine the character, then I'd be all on board with it. I haven't heard anything that's grabbed my attention. I'll probably read them in trade. Maybe I'll be happily surprised.
Speaking of George Perez, this is a poor guy who, you know, of his favorite comic book characters is Superman. This guy
so
waited
sad.
Forever to draw Superman and have the monthly Superman title. This was awesome. Not only is it not the continuity he grew up with,
right?
Not the costume he wanted to draw, probably, because this new armor is silly.
Yep.
And it's just like, well, and then they chase him away from the book because it's like, insane.
And Superman was probably the most affected by the New 52.
Yeah.
Whereas Batman talked about doing a
reboot curve was what they told us at like a retailer meeting. And they said the more the character is selling, the less will change. And the less the character is selling, the more will change.
So Batman and Green Lantern, no
untouched.
Changes.
Right.
Green Lantern, they literally drew some lines on his costume and continued the story.
It was like Jim Lee's like, everyone needs stitching on their costume because it's 2001. And
right. Batman got a costume change and they compressed his timeline to where he has a Robin every 8 months, which we talked about on the first one.
Yeah.
Yep. Batman's well, you know, you didn't count on my ball. Loyal army of orphans, did you? But yeah, you know, I want to talk about Superman's secret identity one last time before we move on, because I'm trying to defend Superman Returns, and that's what I really want us to talk about, is they talk about his secret identity in a way there that really summed it up for me, is that when Lois and her fiancé, Richard White, are talking about Superman, Richard White says, oh, do you think maybe it's Clark? Like, he looks just like him. And they look over, and Clark gives a goofy wave, and then they both laugh, because they're adults, and adults put labels on people, but not one scene earlier, that little boy looks up at Superman and Clark and sees Superman on the TV and sees Clark, and he just starts hyperventilating because he doesn't put labels on people. He just sees two guys that look exactly alike. We give Superman a secret identity by saying Clark's a nerd, Clark's a loser, Clark's a milksop, or whatever fancy words they used to use back in the 30s.
Milksop.
I love that word. I want to bring it
that
back.
That was a big Stan Lee word. I remember Peter Parker being called a milksop.
Yeah, I remember that in Wallflower, which, again, has fallen by the wayside. I miss Milksop more than Wallflower.
Well, the Wallflowers had two hits.
There's that movie out about a Wallflower.
The Wallflowers?
No, it's like a
Bob Dylan's son has the one.
In any case, is just one of the many things I love about Superman Returns, the brilliant movie that got me into Superman in the first place.
You haven't been into Superman that long, is what you're saying.
You know, I always liked Superman, but that was the first movie that made it make sense to me. That's when I saw that movie, and the climax of that movie is what made me realize, I get it now, his greatest power is not super strength. His greatest power is his ability to move people.
Definitely had problems with that movie, but like, I think it got a really unfair rap.
I have one problem with that movie. And that's pacing.
Yeah.
I think that movie would have been...
it has a little slow parts.
Movie could have lost 45 minutes and been a lot better.
I think
And it's not like removing plot points. It's just every scene could have been tighter. Every scene could have moved a little faster. There's nothing in it that happens that I don't like. I do like the cast. I love Kevin Spacey and Parker Posey in it.
Yeah. Yep.
I even think
that Brandon Routh did a great job as like because you know he's trying to emulate Christopher Reeve.
He's trying to do a Christopher Reeve impression, so he doesn't quite shine through.
Yeah.
Well, also, you know, he doesn't have the. I mean, Superman does have a supporting cast, but in like the Nolan Batman movies, they give him Alfred and Lucius Fox to talk to and bounce off of and express himself with, and then they put dynamite actors in those otherwise minor roles, and that lets you express the character more. Superman has no confidant in the film series. Even if you've got the cool supporting cast, Lois doesn't know his identity. So who does he talk to? Well, he sits in space alone and broods, and that's a lot harder to be interesting. You ended up with these beautiful visuals, and I resonated with Superman's absolute loneliness, which is how the movie starts, as he goes off and finds out, yep, I'm the last one in the universe. And that's great, but it's a lot harder, I think, for audiences to get behind.
Well, I think you kind of put your finger on one of the big problems Superman has is that his secret is so the center of his character that he doesn't have a lot of people he can talk to. Batman's supposed to be an isolated character, yet he's got this entire rich family. He's got 17 sidekicks, apparently.
Yeah,
because one every 8 months.
Yeah, one every 8 months. He's Commissioner Gordon, he can tell everything except his identity.
Right.
Alfred, he can tell everything to. Superman has his mother and father who are in Smallville, depending on who's doing it, are either very old or middle-aged.
Or dead.
Yeah. And they're not involved. They don't live in Metropolis. They can't affect the story at all.
Yeah. So if he goes interesting is it to see in a comic Superman on the phone talking to his parents?
So if he goes to Smallville, he is leaving the action. You don't have that moment of Batman and Commissioner Gordon on a rooftop. You don't have that moment of Batman
in the cave.
Yes.
Yeah. Superman has no Commissioner Gordon. The closest is like a Perry White or Jimmy Olsen, and it's like
that would be cool.
Is maybe doing more with Perry White as this sort of like, and they did this kind of on Lois and Clark, where Perry's this very prominent community figure. He has a lot of influence as the editor-in-chief of the biggest paper in the biggest city in the world. Why don't they communicate more or talk more about investigating Lex Luthor or something like that? There's a lot of potential there that's totally overlooked.
Well, it's like going back to the movie, you know, Superman Returns. It's like, this was a movie where a lot of people didn't like it, but it's like, we live in a world where fucking Ghost Rider got a sequel.
Right.
And Superman Returns didn't. And it's like...
Yeah. Superman Returns did. It's just a reboot.
A lot of people, 10 years.
Superman got a sequel. Superman Returns did.
That's what I'm saying, though. Superman Returns, I think, got cheated. There should have been a sequel to that movie, which would have satisfied all the Superman needs to punch something.
But this is DC's problem, is that the Batman movies are so outrageously successful that they're not accepting anything less. Superman Returns did pretty well, but it was very expensive.
Yeah, but I think it did enough where they should have just done a sequel.
And they could have had one out already.
Then Green Lantern bombed, and now they're afraid to do anything except Justice League.
Right. Yeah, you know, which is crazy.
Because apparently like Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and Flash were all in development.
All got shelved.
Stopped dead when Green Lantern
I heard out. Wonder Woman's still going to happen before Justice League is just like a rumor, but you know, if it's on superhero hype, then it's true, but it's... The rest of them, I have no idea if they're even close to getting a film. But the thing that drives me crazy about DC is since they've owned the film rights to all their characters from the start because of Time Warner, they could have had a sequel to Superman Returns and then a World's Finest movie teaming up Superman and Batman. before the first Iron Man even hit theaters.
They were
remember, Batman Begins came out in 2004. Superman Returns came out in 2006. Mm-hmm. You could have had your world's finest movie, and Justice League could have been on its way before Avengers was ready to be in production.
Well, you remember in the late 90s. In 2000, Wolfgang Peterson was working on A World's Finest because they didn't know what to do with either franchise.
Yeah.
And then when they and there was a lot of talk that Smallville originally started as Bruce Wayne in the series.
Really?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it was the original pitch was it's Bruce Wayne learning martial arts, learning detective skills.
That's awesome.
They should still do that show.
Yeah, he never puts on the Batman suit in it. And that once they decided to move forward, Batman Begins, they kind of closed the door on Batman as a television show. And then I'm sure you do know, when Smallville ended, the next show was going to be Dick Grayson.
That I did hear.
And it was going to be about this traveling circus, and he solves crimes, and he's learning how to be a guy. And there's always there's always a threat of his parents dying.
Yeah.
But there would be no Batman. No Bruce Wayne in it. And of course they did do Birds of Prey, which was probably the worst.
Yeah, but that's not like corollary to Smallville.
Yeah, that was so far.
It was not an origin story the way we're talking about.
Well, it was also Batman Runs Away, which no one bought.
Yeah.
You know,
Batman's done.
Batman ran away from Gotham City, which just is the complete opposite of that.
Well, getting back to the World's Finest idea to show how far along they were getting or how committed they were is in I Am Legend. And I don't know if we maybe talked about this or not.
Oh, yeah.
And I Am Legend, he's walking around Times Square, and there's a movie poster that says like 2012 or 2010 on it, and it's a Superman Batman logo from the comic.
That's pretty cool.
And this was after Batman Begins. This was after Superman Returns. So they were teasing for this movie. They had plans to do it, and it never got off the ground.
Right.
It's like, you know, they decided to do a different Superman, and Batman just went ahead and did its own thing.
You know, Jeff Sussman of the Bat Signal podcast is as big a Superman fan as he is a Batman fan. So I figured this would be the perfect time to give him a call on the Bat Phone, get his perspective on what the Man of Steel means for longtime fans like him.
You can always say that Superman is that beacon of pure good. And in a time where nobody trusts anybody and there's just so much suspicion of evil, the idea that you can have this idealized character, you have to see that. You know, if approached correctly, there has to be some angle of appeal to the masses in a character like that. My concern for the Zack Snyder movie, I think they're really understanding that they have to be able to portray just how powerful Superman really is, because I don't think on screen it's ever really been depicted that way. And I think they're making a priority. It's obvious why they chose Zack Snyder. They're calling it Man of Steel. You know, I think if people truly understand the extent of his real power for the first time, then that might wake people up to just how awesome this character could be. What I'm concerned is that he'll lose the focus on the Clark Kent aspect of the character, which is really the human side of the character, and that's why it's the best part of the Superman character, is when he's disguised as Clark Kent. Then the Superman appearances are little victories for Clark Kent, you know, because he gets to shine as Superman. Clark Kent is the story. So, the more you can humanize him, you know, and it's, you know, there's just that great comedy that was played so well in the Richard Donner movies that, you know, they're focusing all on power. Well, good. I mean, I hope that's definitely part of bringing Superman into the modern appeals, reminding people just how awesome he truly is. But at the same time, if they lose that human side that was so important to the success of the original Superman movies, then I wonder if it's going to just neutralize the whole effect of the movie.
Yeah. So what you're saying is kind of what they say about Superman and Batman, that with Batman, Bruce Wayne is the mask, and with Superman, even though he's not wearing a mask, Superman is the mask. And it's really comes down to who Clark is.
Well, you know, exactly. When you watch Batman, I mean, it's one thing I really love about how the Nolan movies were done is that I'm not bored when Bruce Wayne's on screen. I really felt like the story was about Bruce Wayne.
Right, I felt like Bruce Wayne was an actual character, where as much as I love the Tim Burton movies, it's Michael Keaton and then Michael Keaton in a suit.
So if we can have fun watching Bruce Wayne, because he is kind of fun, you know, and then we can also have fun watching him as Batman, you know. The thing about, you know, Superman, depending on who he's fighting, you know he's going to win, and it's awesome to show, he just shows off this display of strength, and it's amazing, you know. Really, it's always Clark Kent's stakes that make it interesting, you know. And I think that it's not Batman. It doesn't need to be brooding either. I mean, it's important to, you know, people love a laugh. I mean, I like the idea of doing it almost as a comedy, you know?
Well, which is what Donner does. Donner really kept it light.
Exactly. And, you know, I understand why Bryan Singer, I mean, someone gave me the keys to a Superman movie and they were going to let me try to do an ode to the Richard Donner movie. Like, I understand what he was trying to do, but, you know, it doesn't need to be exactly like Donner's. I think it's what's important to take from Donner's movie is that, you know, he was able to make, you know, Coel is having fun being Christopher Reeve and being, I'm sorry, I love
it. Really does feel like that, doesn't it? Doesn't it feel like
Coel was being Christopher Reeve? First of all, Christopher Reeve was having a great time portraying Clark Kent.
Yeah, even in the bad movies, even in 3 and 4, he's giving
like
it a
three.
Lot.
I like 3.
3 is kind of crazy.
It's much better. 4 is not good at all.
Well, 4 is, yeah, 4 is horrendous. 3 is
Quest
crazy.
Quest of Peace has that one scene where he's on the double date with Lois Lane and Lacey Warfield, and he's flying back and forth. That's a great scene.
Yeah, I remember that in the Brady Bunch, Jeff. I remember Peter switching into his Dracula costume.
I mean, it's a little bit ridiculous. You know, Clark pretends like he gets stuck on a luggage cart, and he's like, oh, excuse me. But other than that, you know, Superman 4 is whatever. But
Superman 4 is...
Yeah, I feel like Christopher Reeve not only was born to do it, I mean, that's a given, kind of, but he really, I'm not even going to say made it his own. He enjoyed playing Clark Kent and playing Superman, and he played them as the same guy, really. He really did. I mean, it always feels like he's just having fun as Clark Kent, almost. You know,
that's great
being on the joke, and so you don't copy what Donner did, but you at least take that from it that you find an actor not just who looks the part. Like I always thought, someone like Brendan Fraser might be good to do it. You know, you need somebody who can not only portray the physicality of it, but also can play the comedy. You know.
Would not have minded if they had given it to Tom Welling. I thought by the end of Smallville, he completely understood that role. And granted, he wasn't in the best representation as Superman, but I always thought by the end of that show, it's like, it's time to let this kid graduate because he understands Clark and he understands Superman. And he has that bit of a charm to him. So what do you think about Henry Cavill? What's your expectation?
He definitely, I think he looks the part. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to just depend on, I'm already seeing that they're going to do some really awesome stuff when he's Superman. But, and mind you, I am a little concerned that they're changing the origin so that he was predestined by the Kryptonian Council, predestined to be this messianic type character, as if it wasn't already enough of a messianic reference.
Oh, so he's not just a random child of Jor-El who happens to have a spaceship.
It's so much better if he's just a refugee. That's how it was written. His parents sent him to Earth out of desperation, and because the Kents raised him right, that is why he turned out good. Thank goodness the Kents found him.
Yeah.
You know? Because it could have been anybody. That's what makes the story exciting, that he was a refugee. Jor-El chose Earth knowing that it would sustain him and that he would have just that slight physical edge. But, I mean, think about now, what they're going to do right in Man of Steel is show how threatened that people would feel by someone like Superman and how worried a lot of people would be if someone like this just arrived. And that's some really interesting part of the story that's never really been explored on screen. So it can make for a really interesting movie, and the action is bound to be great. But like I said, I wouldn't want them to remake the Donner movie, but if they forget to make Clark Kent fun, if they forget to have this, you know, if this is all angst for him, a la Batman.
Right.
No, it's not Batman.
Yeah, and that's what worries me about the trailer. I know a lot of people are excited about the trailer, but it felt very Batman Begins. And
it's
like,
too
Superman, self-serious. Yeah, Superman is not Batman. It's kind of what I think killed Green Lantern for me last year was they tried to turn him into Iron Man. And I was like, well, Hal Jordan's not Tony Stark. You know, it's one of the many problems, but it almost seemed like they had a meeting and they were like, okay, Iron Man was a huge hit. This is how you introduce a superhero that the masses don't know. Just do that, whether or not the character's right for it. And I am worried that Warner Brothers is thinking, all right, the Nolan Batman films were huge successes. They got nominated. You know, that's how we do superheroes, so let's do that.
Exactly. Well, there is always that risk, and they're the ones with the keys. You know, they have the money, and they see a formula and they just hand it off. Like I said, I mean, it really seems like they're doing a couple of things that really needed to be done with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I like some of the direction, but I agree with John. That trailer, it doesn't look fun. I'll be totally honest with you. I'm more excited for Iron Man 3.
I think every sky in that trailer is overcast.
Every sky is overcast, and when they show him fly, he's just launching off the earth. For instance,
I tell you, my favorite moment of Superman Returns is when you do that 360 of him in orbit, and you go under his feet and around. That I felt like that was one of the moments where Singer just kind of conveyed kind of the inner peace of Superman, which obviously Batman and Spider-Man
I did like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I want to see the flying. I don't want to just see the grand gestures that Superman does. I want to feel like, what would it be like if a guy could actually do these things, you know?
Right. So, yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
That's the hardest thing. I mean, it's way easier. Spider-Man's the hardest thing to portray. I mean, I did like some of the wire work they were doing in Amazing Spider-Man, because it made it, you know, that always makes it a lot more realistic.
I liked Andrew Garfield more than Tobey Maguire. I just thought he wasn't in the best movie for him. You know, I was really wondering, okay, what's the second one going to be? You
know, they have yet to make the definitive Spider-Man movie.
I really like Spider-Man 2.
I did like Spider-Man 2, actually. I did.
Don't forget, you can subscribe to the Bat Signal on iTunes.
Twitter, at Bat Signal Show, and I'm at SussMe, SussMe.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
I went to the movies last night to see The Last Stand with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And?
Well, I thought I was going to go see a really crappy, cheesy movie, and I was so disappointed because it was actually pretty good. I mean, I'm not winning any Oscars or anything, but I actually really enjoyed it. You know, it's so funny to see him so old, but they didn't do anything with him that's like, forget he's old. No, the whole point is that he's like old, retired. He was a hotshot, now lives in a small town.
Kind of like Indiana Jones or...
Yeah, where they acknowledge the age, which helps. But I tell you, the best line I've ever heard out of Schwarzenegger is the Austrian sheriff in the middle of Texas going, I am the sheriff. It was the best thing ever. And I mean, it's a good line. The line's not silly, but oh yeah, just the
delivery.
But it's like, they even acknowledge his, like, the fact that he's clearly an immigrant. He tells the bad guy who's like a Mexican drug dealer,
well,
you give immigrants a bad name. And like, at least they acknowledge that, yeah, he's Austrian. I'm not trying to pretend he's from Texas.
Schwarzenegger always has to have that line where he tells you who he is.
The Terminator.
We were talking on one of the old podcasts and Jingle All the Way.
I love that movie.
Where he's like, I'm the Double Man. That one is an interesting. It's still up on iTunes. That one becomes. We had a drinking contest. Anytime he said Turbo Man. So if you want to hear us get progressively drunker,
you guys got through the movie.
Yeah,
without,
but we're not
cirrhosis
in a good,
of the liver.
We're not in good shape at the end of.
Wow.
We had to pause it and go down for more. We had been through that, but there was a moment where we said if Schwarzenegger had played Dracula.
That would be awesome.
There would have been a moment where he would stand in a window and go, I'm the Dracula!
I would even just love to hear him pronounce the word Dracula.
Oh, I would Dracula. Like. And that's how I felt watching The Last Stand. Every line the guy delivered was gold. Like, I'm going to write you citation. Like, citation out of Schwarzenegger's mouth.
Awesome.
So, like,
that's
mwah,
gold.
Perfect.
Gold.
If you get a chance, it's not a bad flick, and I think it's enjoyable. So, you know... Jamie Alexander's in it. She's pretty good. There's some good comic relief. It's a decent flick. I liked it.
Yeah, I saw. I rented it, so I didn't go to the movies this week. But I rented Looper this week, and this is the first time I've seen that.
I haven't seen it either, so no spoilers.
It's really interesting. Yeah, in fact, Dave Redfield and I, who's been on the show, we had both seen it. We made Steven go to the back of the store while
we
discussed
it. I had to
hide
in the bathroom.
We had some very specific
in my own store. That I pay rent in. I had to hide in the bathroom.
And well, you did.
Well,
yeah,
it's your
did.
Bathroom.
Yeah.
I guess that's true. I'm paying for it.
Do
I might as well use
it. It was it's mine
you
too.
You don't have to hide in somebody else's
Pardon
bathroom.
Yeah. I'm going to chalk line down the middle of it.
Well, the interesting...
I want to have with the toilet.
The conversation we had about it was very spoiler-filled, so I won't get into it now. But it was a really good idea. It was a great premise. The two of them are fantastic. The biggest hurdle they had to get over was convincing them that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is actually a young Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
And they managed...
With full head of hair.
They managed... Yeah.
Oh, that was cold.
They
was
managed
cold.
To do it. Well, actually, Bruce Willis in it has, like, an early Picard. He's got, like, the horseshoe pattern that's gray. He doesn't have the shaved head in it.
Yeah.
So, like... They really make an attempt to go, this is him at 30, this is him at 60.
Yeah, the makeup effects looked amazing.
How old is Bruce Willis? Is he 60?
I'm guessing he's got to be around
to do Die Hard.
I think
5
that's the trick to...
Because he was in his 30s when... I think he was in his late 30s when he did Die Hard. Because he was in his mid-30s when he started moonlighting. So that's mid-80s.
I think that's the trick to looking young or like not you're not aging like you know Picard head. Did is you know go bald early.
That's actually an interesting point.
Yeah, because Patrick Stewart
hit the age of 50 at the age of 20 and then never aged again ever.
Yeah, a day.
He looks almost the same now as he does in the pilot of Next Generation.
It's unreal.
That's the same thing with Bruce Willis. You look at him, you're like, wow, he aged really good. Yeah. No one says Bruce Willis doesn't age good, and it's because he went bald early.
Although you watch that first season of Moonlighting, you see how much hair he did have.
Yeah?
Wow. Moonlighting was a great show. I wish it was streaming on Netflix.
What was that movie where... it's like Josh Hartnett. Is that the guy? And it was like Bruce Willis is like an assassin or something. And Morgan Freeman. And
Freeman.
We mention him a lot on this podcast, too.
And you know
Morgan
what?
Freeman and Ben Kingsley are like warring gang bosses.
Oh, my God. Really? Oh, my
God. You guys haven't seen this movie?
Wait, is that Red?
No, it's not Red. This is not based...
Isn't it like Crazy Eights or Crazy...
Morgan Freeman and Ben Kingsley.
They're like two mob bosses in two separate
that
towers
sounds
like across the street from each other. And they never leave their penthouses because they have a hit out on each other. And they
can't. That is so awesome.
Well, anyway, they put a long, like, goofy wig and a mustache on Bruce Willis. And he looks ridiculous. But it's awesome. I got to get this movie.
There is a shot in Looper where they show Joseph Gordon-Levitt aging to Bruce Willis, like they show how his life, and they have like Joseph Gordon-Levitt in various stages of older makeup, and then Bruce Willis in various stages of younger makeup, and there is one where like Bruce Willis is receding and he's got long hair. And you should not never put a wig on Bruce Willis.
No.
That's what I'm thinking.
Perfect.
Lucky number 11.
Oh, I want to see that. Yeah, I heard about
it. Bring
it
into the shop.
Thanks.
You can't watch it.
I'll take it home.
Now, is that your recommendation for this week, or you have something else?
No. Black Books. That show from Netflix.
My God. The British show.
This is going to be this is how I'm going to start acting at the store. I'm going to like just take off all the filters. You know, I'm just going to stop pretending and I'm just going to act like that guy.
Well, it's Dylan Moran from Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead. And basically, it's a British show. He's like a bookkeep owner. He's kind of a dick. And he's a complete moron.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not in My Book production.
Take that, meatball!